Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 112.
Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Matt, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Stark. How are you?
Pretty good. So, this week there was some interesting Marvel news with some interesting background, and as Film Nerds Unlimited resident Marvel analysts, I thought that you and I should probably talk about it.
Yeah, let's dig in. I will admit up front, though, that this is all pretty, I think it's a little bit new to us, and we're certainly not studio insiders, but I think we're judging based on, what people that we read and sort of trust have said in terms of the actual facts of it.
Absolutely. This is like 27th hand information at best.
Right.
And that's being really, really, really generous. But this will probably be a similar conversation to the one that I had with Ben Flanagan last week about Warner Brothers and the, possible political machinations there and then their kind of future outlook. So we'll be doing the same kind of bull crap here.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, but it'll be entertaining. So let's just get into it. So this week, I think it was this week, it was announced, or not really announced, it just kind of came out that Marvel has totally dropped the Inhumans from their Phase 3 slate. I think it was previously scheduled for, 2019? Is that correct?
It was like borderline Phase 3, Phase 4, by the way, but that's pretty nitpicky.
Was it going to be after Infinity Wars?
It's unclear. Like, I think the last time we heard about it, it was originally maybe 2018 and got bumped to 2019, and it is now totally not scheduled at all.
2019. Unclear is probably going to be the word of the day. So there's lots of backstory. I would definitely recommend anybody that's interested in this. There's a really interesting Hollywood Reporter article by Kim Masters about how Marvel kind of clawed its way to the top of the of Hollywood. And then there's also several articles by Devin Faraci at Birth, Movies, Death that are really interesting. And he's, in general, he's just a really good Marvel, a true Marvel analyst, despite what you might think of his various other opinions on the universe as it exists. So I think that I guess a good way to start is just kind of talk about that. I guess there's no real good way to go forward without bringing up the name Ike Perlmutter, who was Avi Arad's business partner whenever Toy Biz bailed Marvel out of bankruptcy in the late 90s, which is something I remember reading a lot about at the time. And then as they were behind Marvel licensing out their superheroes to make movies like Blade and Spider-Man and X-Men and the Hulk and more X-Men and Fantastic Four and Daredevil. Oh God. So they have a spotty track record when it comes to movies. And I'm not sure if the whole become a self-running movie studio was part of their overall plan. Whatever the case, in recent years, they're kind of known for, especially Perlmutter is known for being very frugal and has been part of it's been speculated that he's been part of the issue with paying Marvel actors. He's the guy that has kept Chris Evans at such a low rate for his Captain America movies. There is a horrible story out there that whenever Terrence Howard wanted more money to come back for Iron Man 2, that Perlmutter said, well, just get Don Cheadle. They all look the same anyway, which is
fine.
Yeah, oh, big time. So it's that kind of stuff where he's a businessman first, clearly. He was apparently also on the Marvel Creative Committee, which also included Brian Michael Bendis, who is wonderful, and a few other big names at Marvel and on the movie side of things. So he's been kind of very, very active. And then last September, Disney restructured itself so that Marvel Entertainment still stays underneath Perlmutter. However, Marvel Studios and Kevin Feige specifically now report directly to Alan Horn, who, going back to our conversation last week, used to run Warner Brothers and did a pretty damn good job at it. So now Marvel Studios is its own entity and actually separate from Marvel TV, Marvel Comics, and all these other things. So there has been speculation that, and I'll wrap up here soon, there's speculation that now that Perlmutter is out of the picture, he was kind of the guy that was wanted the Inhumans to be the new mutants of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Marvel Comics Universe, and kind of force the value of the X-Men brand down since it's licensed to Fox. And now that that's no longer his pet project is no longer, well, his pet project is no longer impacted by the Marvel, no longer ties into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's kind of theorized that the Inhumans will kind of be dropped out of consideration, at least for the time being. Do you think that I kind of described it the best possible way?
Seems pretty fair to me, and I would say another, I mean, the implications for having this guy removed from the movie studio process are pretty far-reaching, and it also could impact the TV and comic side of it eventually, but as long as those two things are under him, it probably won't. Let's assume that it doesn't affect those two things for the time being. I mean, I think what you mentioned with Terrence Howard is a pretty extreme indicator, but I think also there have been it seems like there are a lot of people who feel like he was a big reason why a lot of the, you know, filmmaking talent that gravitated toward Marvel and that had built these great relationships with Kevin Feige ended up leaving in various circumstances. And you did, by the way, if you go back and think about it, all of those cases, right? Edgar Wright, you know,
Patty Jenkins.
Yeah, Patty Jenkins, really Joss Whedon as well.
Sure, John Favreau.
And John Favreau. All of those guys, when you think about them departing their movie-making activities at Marvel, really, you can pretty quickly find that they had only positive things to say about Kevin Feige. They almost all said, like, it was great working with him. Like, I have no issues with him. He was, you know, it doesn't seem like he was the source of the clash. So that
yeah, they all
yeah.
They all kind of reference Marvel in general, and it would just make sense that, well, if you're going to personify that, you should probably point to the guy at the top, you know?
Right. And so, I mean, I think that, look, you can certainly understand how someone could find himself in this position that this Perlmutter fellow found himself in. I mean, if Marvel was not sort of rescued in the mid-90s and licensed the way it was, I mean, look, certainly he made some extremely successful moves. If he is, in fact, responsible, along with Avi Arad, for the Spider-Man movies being made and the X-Men movies being made, we're not even talking about any of this right now because the success of those movies paved the way for all of this stuff that's happening now to happen. It's just that what happened over time was, you know, I think bigger studios and more, you know, savvy producers saw that there was more money being left on the table and that this could be done better and this could be an even cooler thing than it already was. And so, you know, at a certain point, you see this, you know, all over in across the board in lots of industries. You'll see a guy that's a pioneer and makes a great call, and the industry very quickly outgrows him, and he becomes a dinosaur, and he's in the way. And, you know, he certainly probably deserves to be where he is, but I think it sounds like a lot of folks are saying that he's holding things back. And, you know, the Inhumans movie is something that's a really interesting thing that's been hanging out there for a long time because I've read, you know, on the comic end of it, it's a very unique and interesting property, and it has some cool characters in it and some really great concepts. But with what Marvel has basically done with it, on the TV side, which is where they first introduced it, it basically is a replacement. They're using it like a replacement for the concept of X-Men, right? It's just a bunch of people, suddenly they're normal people, and then one day they wake up and they have a superpower, and it's happening all over the world, and they're being persecuted. I mean, it's exactly what the X-Men are. So, you know, it's pretty clear that they were trying to create their own X-Men. And the problem with doing that, the whole problem with that concept, is that the X-Men and the reason why it's so valuable is not just because of the premise. It's not just the concept. I mean, there's like, you know, 30 or 40 years worth of great stories and characters that are have been proven over time that people like them. So removing a ton of risk when you're talking about a franchise like the X-Men as opposed to the Inhumans, which is essentially a total unknown commodity to the general public. I mean, nobody, there's not a single character in that franchise that your average person off the street would be able to recognize. So
I just today saw a child at Target wearing a Maximus shirt.
It's, look, again, to be fair, it's a really cool story.
But yeah, I mean Marvel has basically fabricated their own franchise out of nothing with the Guardians of the Galaxy, but I think even that has more, is somehow Guardians of the Galaxy isn't even as weird as a human, I think.
Right.
Once you look at that cast.
I mean, cast
of characters, that is.
Right. It's I think it had an obvious tone. Inhumans could go a number of different ways because the tone of Guardians of the Galaxy, again, a big part of why some of these properties that you look and go, this is really weird. I can't, you know, I'm not really sure why Marvel's making this movie, and then it turned out to be a great movie, is because they had these group of people involved in the creative process who understood, you know, what is the best version of this story and this character. And honestly, from as a person who at the time was a total outsider, I looked at them making a Thor movie and thought, this is weird. Like, I don't really understand why the movie studio that's making Iron Man movies is going to make a movie about a Norse god, you know, as a superhero. But, you know, now with having read some Thor and having seen these movies, you get it. You get that they obviously had a clear idea of the tone of this thing and what it would be like the whole way. And to me, that's the big question mark with what you're trying to do on a business side and the sort of development side with this Inhumans idea is, what are you going to do with it? Are you just trying to make your version of X-Men? Are you trying to sneak through an X-Men movie without calling it that? Or do you have, you know, a legitimately great idea? And it's pretty clear at this point with what Perlmutter was doing on the television side that I don't think this was ever really about having a great story and characters. It was more about creating a franchise that was a replacement for the X-Men. And
yeah.
I think it's very intriguing to me on a number of levels that they dropped this idea. On the one hand, you wonder, are we looking at, you know, an era where Marvel Studios is willing to participate in these sort of joint things with other studios, right? Because now they're obviously pretty comfortable with what they're doing with Sony. They got a movie coming out next week that has a character that, you know, the rights are still owned by Sony.
Spoilers.
And they're already making another movie with them. So could they work something out with Fox? And there have already been, you know, The Tim Miller who made Deadpool is already sort of throwing that around out there that he's trying to, you know, get some meetings with Kevin Feige to try and make something like that happen. So, I mean, I think what we're starting to see happen, hopefully, is that guys like Perlmutter, who viewed this as a very cutthroat business where, you know, we're going to make our properties work, and we're going to sabotage what other people are doing, that approach is going out the window. And maybe instead Marvel's, you know, looking at what they've got and they're saying, look, these things are successful enough that we can share some of this wealth here, because we're all going to make a lot of money if we can, if you guys will take the incredible brand strength and studio process that we have built up here, and you let us leverage these incredibly popular characters. I'm sure that people in Hollywood don't like sharing money, but everybody could make a lot of money if they would just sort of let Marvel do it for them, you know?
Well, but would they make money off of Inhumans?
I think that's different. I mean, again, I think Marvel knows that they've, you know, would you rather take the risk of trying to launch your own multi-platform franchise that nobody cares about it right now or knows about it,
with no clear entry point?
Yeah, and or would you rather do that, or would you rather go to Fox and say, look, we won't make as much money off of it, but we will all make a lot of money if you let us recast these characters, which you're done with, by the way. You're not going to make any more Wolverine movies. You're not going to make any more movies with the classic X-Men for a long time. You just completed your, you know, second full arc of these movies. Let us recast them and mix them in with all of these other characters that were already, you know, I mean, they're already established. People are having, you know, it seems like Marvel has not really put out a character yet that people were even sort of meh about, you know?
Yeah.
So to use their movies like they're doing with Spider-Man in May to launch, you know, a new version of an already well-liked character, it just seems like a natural fit for them to go that direction.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, let me back up a little bit. And I was casting Perlmutter as this kind of Red Skull-esque villain. And, you know, I shouldn't do that, because I do think that, you know, I think that his willingness to license out Marvel properties and then his willingness to make movies a bunch cheaper than the rest of Hollywood is exactly, like you said, what has brought Marvel to this point. And honestly, I think plenty of studios could learn that lesson. You know, I think if DC just kind of buckled down and have their budgets and gave them to creative filmmakers like Jon Favreau, I think that, you know, they would have a lot more success, or any other studio for that matter.
Yeah, Marvel has never attempted to make an $800 million movie.
Well, they have since The Avengers. I mean, The Avengers was basically the same kind of production as the rest of Hollywood. However, it was well crafted in terms of, you know, built-in character. You know, it was not a gamble by any stretch of the imagination.
It was for already established existing
franchises
that had already proven they would make a ton of money. Yeah,
right. But they're still willing, despite just, it's like they have two tiers now. You know, it's like they made smaller blockbuster movies, and then they made this huge one, and now they mostly still make small ones, but every now and then, you know, they'll make a movie like Ant-Man, but then they'll also make a movie like Age of Ultron, or it seems like Captain America Civil War, which looks to be a very expensive movie. I think the Hollywood could learn a lot from him, aside, you know, not from the bad things, but from the good things, and I agree with you that it seems like Marvel done grown up, you know, and it's time for them to step out and for Kevin Feige to honestly be the mogul that he has proven that he can be, and with these great relationships that he's forged with filmmakers. And I wouldn't be surprised if I don't see them forging any relationships with X-Men, with Fox for X-Men at this point.
I mean, that's a pretty big reach, but I think that you could see the beginnings of some relationships start to form. I think the whole thing of, like, absolutely never will a mutant ever be allowed. Like, no character that was ever called a mutant in a comic book can ever be in a Marvel Studios movie. That might start to ease up a little bit.
Possibly. But what I see, what I think could happen, is that they're tabling Inhumans because Fox does have another property that is at a, you know, bargain basement value at this point, and that's Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
and if they barter this, you know, the license back of Fantastic Four and say, hey,
that's not making you any money. It's certainly not getting you any good reviews. Why don't you let them come back? And not only does that give them a whole new direction to go in their universe, but it also gives them a pretty fantastic endpoint for an Inhumans movie, since that's where the Inhumans originally popped up. And then you have this established franchise that you got to do a little bit of, you know, it's a bit of a fixer-upper in the Fantastic Four, and then you also have an entry point for Inhumans. So I wouldn't be surprised if this kind of getting pulled from the schedule might be an indicator that, I mean, it's kind of a reach, but I don't think it's that big of a reach to think it may be a small indicator that they're talking to Fox about bringing the Fantastic Four in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they are, again, that's not something that is any, you know, there's no competition that could sort of play into that right now. You get the sense maybe from reading some of the stuff, especially that, you know, Devin Faraci wrote, that Perlmutter maybe at some point has formed some professional rivalries that might be playing into some of the things he's doing.
Right.
And you look at what he's doing with the TV properties. I mean, now he's competing with Fox in the TV arena because Fox is making, you know, DC property shows, and they're also about to start making X-Men related television programs too. So, you know, he's got all this other stuff sort of playing into that too. But I think Fantastic Four is not doing anything for anybody in the film and television market right now. It's just going to sit there, and Fox can either, you know, make another go at it in like 10 years, or like you said, they can try to get something out of it by licensing it back to Marvel. And I think we've already seen, I don't know exactly how the Spider-Man thing is going to go down. It seems like for the most part, people have been willing to accept that we're going to try Spider-Man again.
Yeah, no, I've heard zero negativity from any single person, even like the, you know, the most cynical movie critics. I have not heard any negative backlash on just
right.
That idea,
I mean,
and that concept and the fact that we're getting a different Spider-Man.
I think really one of the other very interesting things about this too that I've read out of this was, just like there has been this sort of sticking point with the Inhumans movie, and Perlmutter's trying to use his position over the television department to, you know, influence what they're doing in the film studio. There's also apparently been something in this related to the slow development of the Captain Marvel movie. And I have found it really interesting that as far along as we are in a lot of these other movies, I mean, they've already got, you know, the Russo brothers sort of out there talking about the script, and I think they might even be planning to shoot some of the Infinity War movie, you know, later this year or maybe next year. So they're already moving on that pretty quickly. And this Captain Marvel movie is developing so slowly. We don't even have a lead actor in the cast yet. I know they're working on a screenplay, but
do we have a director?
I don't believe so. No.
Oh.
Well,
so I mean, that's
it's interesting
one of those.
I think it sounds like maybe it's sort of on the other end, whereas Perlmutter was very much considered the guy behind the Inhumans movie, that it was viewed that Feige, you know, that Captain Marvel was Feige's baby, and that it was sort of being held up a little bit because of that.
I think it's all but confirmed that he does not think that, because he's also in charge of, obviously, the toy line.
Right.
This guy also used to own Remington, by the way, or ran Remington, like the gun company.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's all but confirmed that as he was running the toy end of things on Marvel, he's the reason we haven't gotten any Black Widow action figures, because he doesn't think anybody wants female action figures.
Right, which Marvel got a lot of heat for. And,
sure.
You know, and they have been, even though that perception is starting to go away now because of some of these casting moves and how successful they've been with some of their characters, Marvel had a reputation for a few years there of being, you know, a studio that was too slow to develop strong female or non-white characters.
Until that Captain Marvel movie hits, I think they're going to maintain that. I mean, look, I mean,
I think they've done a pretty good job. I actually think they've come a long way with what they did with Scarlett Johansson and Black Widow, and we'll see what happens with the Scarlet Witch character too. But I think they definitely need to have. I think Marvel really needs Captain Marvel and Black Panther to work and be successful, and I think it would be, they've done, in my mind, they've taken great steps to make sure that Black Panther is a very good and successful movie. They're seeding things early. They're putting him in a movie that's going to pretty much a slam dunk to be successful and make him look cool. And they've hired a great director.
Yeah.
So, and they're going to let him, get involved in the screenplay too. So I do know that the screenwriters that are working on Captain Marvel are, they have done some really good stuff before. I don't have their IMDb pages open in front of me, but I remember when they were hired thinking that's a really good move. So hopefully, they continue that, but casting is everything. I mean, Marvel has been successful because they have made so many excellent casting choices. And, they've got to hit that one out of the park. It has to be, I know we talked about this in some other podcasts. I remain kind of skeptical about what is going on with the Wonder Woman project because the lead actress doesn't appeal to me at all. I mean, she's a beautiful woman and it's a pretty cool character, but I don't know who that actress is and I don't care about her. And I think you can do, you can play it down the middle and just say, well, it's a comic book movie, so all we really need to sell is, 18 to 35-year-old men. But I really think the movie that takes off as far as selling a female superhero at the movies, it's got to be a movie that has much broader appeal than that. And, I think that comes down to casting. I think that's a huge part of it. You have to cast somebody who is great and that people already love.
Yeah, I agree. I think, especially when you've got a character that, I think with Wonder Woman, there's never been a huge successful Wonder Woman movie, but I do think there's a built-in cultural knowledge about that character.
Sure.
So you kind of can.
Yeah, and Captain Marvel has none of that. They're selling
exactly.
Yeah.
I agree. I think they need to cast. I mean, I feel like Emily Blunt has kind of come up a lot. But somebody like her or Rachel McAdams, or I think Elizabeth Banks would be a really great choice. And I think that they have a really unique opportunity to not just make this. I think a lot of the problem with a lot of superhero her heroine movies, like I guess my best examples are Catwoman or Aeon Flux or something like that, is that you have they're so worried about making these, they're almost kind of, I guess, Mary Sue type heroines, where they're like, well, they're women, so they do everything right and there's no problems. And I feel like the Paul Feig comedies have probably done a lot to help us get like actual three-dimensional female leads in big budget movies. And I think
things have definitely changed a lot in the last 10 years. And really, you just look at, too, I mean, last year was huge, too. Just from looking at, I understand that the Star Wars brand had a lot to do with the success, but Disney Studios had no problem casting the heroine of that movie, of their huge, huge tentpole movie, was, a young woman. And I don't think they went over the top in trying to, I don't think she came off condescending, which I think sometimes female heroines in movies can be when you're obviously trying to win points with feminists,
Yeah, exactly. She was a three-dimensional character and had an arc. And that's all. I mean, look at any female-driven superhero movie at this point. They certainly don't have the complexity that Robert Downey Jr. has in Iron Man, where you have this guy that's basically reprehensible and he has to go on a journey. And I feel like that they have the opportunity to write somebody that's complex enough and cast somebody that can actually bring that to bear and actually be an entertaining and endearing character the same way that Tony Stark has been. So I feel like I agree, and I hope the best for that movie, and I hope that that's true, that it's Kevin Feige's pet project, and now that he hopefully has kind of free reign to make that happen. Honestly, and I do have a question about the TV properties. So that is that obviously Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if we're going to believe all this stuff, that's clearly a Perlmutter kind of controlled thing, because that's where the Inhumans first popped up.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And also, I should say, for people who don't watch that show, they have, from the very beginning, been very insistent upon making that show, you know, as loaded as possible with little connections to the movie studio, with no apparent
reciprocation
from the movie studio. Movie studio seems completely uninterested in making that happen. But the TV show has found a way to try and you know, sink as many, you know, little hooks into the movie universe as possible. But it's getting tougher.
Yeah, and the Inhumans thing, I think, as somebody that watches that show, I think the Inhumans thing, it's kind of leveled out a little bit now, I think, to be kind of a pretty consistently positive part of the show. But for a while there, it was really sinking the show. And it, you know, if you showed me season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then you were like, guess what, you're getting an Inhumans movie next month, I may not show up, at least on opening weekend, because there was nothing compelling about that.
But I think what's funny about what they did with the show is that, you know, one of the big complaints about the first season was that this was a show set in the Marvel universe, and there were basically no superpowered people on the show, and, you know, it was just a bunch of spies basically, and you know, as they've sort of added to that, and their budget apparently gets bigger, and they're adding more, you know, sort of effects and superpowered characters, to me, it's become a lot less interesting. It turned out that it was a much more fun show when it was exploring kind of the, you know, the much more human side of all of that, and you had, you know, the connections were more like built around S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra, which were things that were always going on in the background of the Marvel movies. And really now they've tried to make their own superheroes, and,
yeah,
you know, they have a couple of canonical characters from Marvel that you could sort of see that Marvel Studios wouldn't really care. Like, if it really comes down to it, sure, a TV show can have Mockingbird. You know,
yeah,
we're
you
not
guys can have
Mockingbird.
Deathlock.
Fine.
We got you Deathlok. You don't like Deathlok?
I mean, Deathlok is basically Cyborg, which,
yeah,
they're not going to make a Cyborg version.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to put Cyborg in a movie. DC's probably not going to put Cyborg in another movie, for God's sake.
Already
said. But, like, I think it's what it's started to look like over time is that the TV series has been allowed to drift further and further from movie continuity. And I think it may be best for the TV properties to eventually break off and not even have to worry about it anymore. You know, because I think there's sometimes it feels like they're a little bit weighed down by it. I don't think that's as much the case for Agent Carter, which I've really enjoyed and I thought is a fun show. And the little small references to Captain America, and obviously the fact that, you know, Howard Stark is a major character on that show, those have been very integral to me, you know, enjoying that show. But for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Phil Coulson's not going to show up in another movie. I don't, if they didn't put him in Age of Ultron, he's probably not going to show up in another movie. So I think just kind of just let them go do their things. Don't hamper them. And they're also, by the way, not connected to the Netflix shows in any noticeable way. So it's almost like you have these two separate TV universes. And, you know, it's really fine. Like, it doesn't hamper my enjoyment of them.
I think they're
so worried that people will stop watching the show if it's not connected to the stories of the movie anymore.
Yeah, I might. because that's the only reason I watch it, is because, hey, I like Marvel movies, and hey, here's something that's kind of like Marvel that I get every week. But Agent Carter I actually watch because it's extremely quality, and because that is also, you know, inhibited by timeline, that show in the second season has also kind of gone in a more supernatural direction than I wished it had. But it's
silly, though. It's like it's a much different show than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's almost, again,
yeah,
I almost
it is.
Wish it wasn't connected to it, because it's a much more lighthearted show. And they're about to launch their third network television series, which is built around two characters that they, you know, I mean, basically it's built around one character, but they sent another one with her, who, you know, they brought this new character into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She was really cool and popular, and the actress, you know, is well liked and has been in other things, and they gave her own show. And, you know, to me, that's kind of a natural way to build a sort of TV narrative universe, if you want to do that. And it's what they've done on Netflix too. They have very much more subtly woven those things together. But if you can't actually depend on the movie properties to give you anything substantial other than Lady Sif for, you know, one episode, then I don't really know why you even want to you know, work that hard to make the connections. And I think it's going to be sort of better off if they don't, you know, try to. I think where it was all headed, obviously, was it seems like Perlmutter wanted to build a movie out of the TV properties. And I think that ultimately would not have been a good idea.
No, that would have been a nightmare. So are the Netflix shows, are those under Marvel TV or are those under Marvel
Studios? That's a good question. I don't really know. I do know that they have an ABC tag on the end of them, so I assume they're under Marvel TV, because they're produced basically by
the ABC
Studios
wing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, but again, there's been no connection. I've only seen, you know, the first two shows that they've done, but they're connected to each other, but they do not appear in any way to be connected to the network television shows.
I mean, I do think that it's worked in comics for, you know, however many decades to have this one big universe, and then there's little corners of them that never ever touch one another. And I think that's okay. So I don't need a big split or justified, you know, breaking point where it's like, well, now it's no longer in the same continuity as the movies. Because honestly, that gets pretty messy, because then it's like, well, where was the break? You know, you literally have to do the alternate reality thing.
Right.
I
guess the only reason it's ever a problem is if one of them wants to use a character and the other ones can't. But, you know, again, to me, I just don't think it's ever going to really come into play that much, because I think the Marvel movies, you can see what Joss Whedon is doing. Like, he's trying really hard to move them away from S.H.I.E.L.D. He doesn't want S.H.I.E.L.D. to be a thing in the movies anymore. Like, we did our S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra arc, so let's move on from it. And the Avengers can be their own thing, and they can have their own building. So, you know, move that narrative away from S.H.I.E.L.D. and let the TV guys just play in the S.H.I.E.L.D. world. So, I don't know. I think it does seem like they are deliberately moving those two wings further apart from each other. And I think it's going to be good for both of them to not have to force so much interaction.
I agree. And I don't need there to be a bunch of TV movie crossover. I guess the only time it would ever hurt me is if they, and it's kind of happened, you know, there's been a few, not necessarily reality shifting events, but big enough events in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that it's like, well,
you know, if portals are opening between worlds, shouldn't Thor, like, just stop by and just be like, hey, what?
Yeah. Like, there have been a couple of moments where definitely in the TV show, although they did this in Ant-Man, better effect, but in the TV show where you would sort of say, hey, why don't we call the Avengers? Like,
yeah.
If they're a thing, we should probably give them a ring right
no,
now.
No, nothing.
We're dealing with apocalyptic level events.
Nothing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been as deftly handled as that single thing in Ant-Man. So
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, and I guess that's a good way to wrap it up, is that no matter what happens on the TV end, it seems like we're kind of free. And it is kind of a exciting new world for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because there does, regardless of what the details are, it does seem like Kevin Feige and the studio are now unencumbered by this creative committee, who apparently have given some pretty slow notes and have caused some headaches for filmmakers like Joss Whedon and Edgar Wright. So, I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, kind of what an unbridled Marvel Studios is going to be like. I really hope that they're not going to flex their muscles and take all the Disney money and you know, pour $300 million into a Captain Marvel movie that doesn't make it back and then, you know, be in the red. I really hope that doesn't happen. I think
no more lady movies.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they don't make money. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, I do.
Iron Man 4. Green light.
Yeah, I think you're. Well, look. By the way, as we're as we're talking right now, I mean, so first of all, Jon Favreau is cozying back up to Marvel because he's going to be a producer on the Infinity War movies, and then as that's happening, Robert Downey Jr. is going around on the press tour for Civil War saying that, you know, Iron Man 4 is a thing that could legitimately happen. So I don't know if those things coincide with Perlmutter getting out of the way. But
I mean, you have to think they do.
Yeah,
I
don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think if they all feel like they've got another good one in them, then go for it. Because I think that character is still very strong right now, and you know, I don't think he's – I think he's very necessary to, you know, the sort of wider story arc that they've had going in these movies. So I'd love to see one more if that's what they feel like they want to do with it.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, I have no reason not to tell Marvel Studios, just go do whatever you want, whatever. If you want to make the fourth Iron Man movie, hey, I wasn't crazy about the third one. But you know what? Just go do whatever you want to do, because I think they've figured it out.
I'm just trying to figure out which property they're going to be able to give to Edgar Wright to make it up to him now that they can bring him back in.
Is Peyton Reed directing Ant-Man and the Wasp? That'd be kind of cruel.
I believe so, but
that'd be kind of cruel to yank that away.
I just want to put Edgar Wright on something, you know, totally off the wall, because Ant-Man would have been. He wanted to do that when absolutely nobody else was interested in it.
Sure.
So let's let him do, like, let him just have his pick, you know, let him go dig through the character library and say, man, we'll just make whatever movie you want. We'll do it.
Constrictor. I'll tell you exactly what they should do. They should let Spider-Man Homecoming make a gajillion dollars and then tell the director of that movie, good job. And then give Spider-Man to Edgar Wright.
Oh!
I hate that I even said that out loud, because now that's all I ever
yeah,
want.
Yeah, man. I'm in. I'll do whatever, you know, I will follow Edgar Wright to the ends of the earth, but I would love it if he came back to Marvel.
Well, maybe now it'll be a possibility, if indeed, you know, one of those, his big obstacle is out of the way. Maybe we'll see that. Maybe we'll see Favreau come back. And honestly, I'd love to see Joss Whedon come back. I don't know what he would do. You know, maybe he could make a West Coast Avengers movie, or maybe he could make a movie that's not an Avengers movie. Maybe he could make Iron Man 4. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I'm very curious to see where it all goes. I think things are kind of set in stone for a few years here for Marvel, but you know, eventually, in a few years here, I'm sure we're going to see another one of those big press conference events where they drop 15 movies on us, and I'm excited to see kind of where that goes.
Yeah, me too. It'll just be Doctor Strange 2 and 3 and 4. Phase 4 will be 100% Doctor Strange. All right, man. Well, I'm obviously we've managed to talk this whole time without talking about the movie next week, but I know you're excited.
We'll
so
definitely be podcasting about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, so maybe we can get together again to talk about an actual Marvel movie that actually exists.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited. Coming soon.